Blog Talk Radio.
In the dead of night, when thy winter wounds shall not be healed from the wind which howls about your being. In the dead of night, when your friends have gone and you sit huddled around the castle's fire. In the dead of night, when all is dark, who will you be tonight?
There is nothing wrong with your computer.
There is nothing wrong with your audio
or your video.
We are controlling transmission
for the next hour,
and we will control all that is here. Let me repeat, there is nothing wrong with your computer. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery
which reaches from the inner mind to Terror Chat, thinking outside of the box. You're in the night zone with the Calling Night.
Paranormal events are not a modern phenomenon. They are mentioned in academic texts throughout history, dating back to the very origins of mankind. The majority of religions from around the world have wrapped themselves in this divine return of godlike beings based upon scattered, written word. The complexity of universal understanding, wormholes, multi-dimensions, transcendental time shifting, spirit guides, ghosts, universal energy, metaphysical understandings. The Sumerians write of the return of godlike creatures known as the Anunnaki. These were the angels who descended to earth and bred with the daughters of men to form a workforce, a slave world for the Anunnaki's needs. UFO sightings and paranormal events are reported throughout the world on a regular basis. Structured flying craft. To date, there have been over 10,000 reported and documented crop circles throughout the world. While many still go unreported each year, the emergence of the phenomenon in the world media and the internet has allowed more information to be shared. TerraChat and a number of its affiliate stations and websites will make every effort to bring whatever information is possible available to you. However, TerraChat reminds you,
keep your mental. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knight.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, madam and messieurs. Welcome to the Night Zone. My name is Colin Knight. I'll be with you for the next hour. For those of you who receive the feed through our affiliate networks down the line, we're glad you've stayed tuned after the news. And for our Blog Talk listeners, thank you for patiently waiting as we joined the network.
And this is the Night Zone. All background music and bumps heard on TerraChat can be found at GarageBand.com. Support your local artists.
You are listening to
TerraChat
on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knight.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Night Zone. My name is Colin Knight. It's good to be here tonight. Finally got some time where we could put together a show and bring you some more information of the Paranormal Society. And in doing so, we have with us a couple of guests that we've had in the past. We've managed to get them two together at the last minute. The first one is Marshall Masters. Good evening, Marshall. You're on the air, sir.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be back, Colin.
And it's good to have you, Marshall. And I believe on the other line I have Chris Hawley from Endless Journey. Are you on the air, Chris? Are you there?
Okay, I have a 631 number up on Skype. Are you on the air? No, I guess it's just me and you for now, Marshall. Chris has been having, she is phone challenged on Long Island tonight. She said there's a few strange things going on. She doesn't quite understand what's happening out there, but they're having some difficult time with their power issues. So we'll have to work in line with her and wait for her to come online. I appreciate you coming in tonight, sir.
Hey, it's good to be here. And sorry to hear that Chris is having problems out there, and we're just going to have more of those as time goes on. You can bet your dippy on that.
But, yeah, I think so, too. And I also see up on my virtual studio, we have Pamela from Canada also on the line. So welcome, Pam. We're glad that glad you're out there in listener's land. We hope you enjoy yourself. So, Marshall, as we were talking about earlier today, regarding the events of 2012 and what everybody is portraying, it's interesting, if not sad, to see that these, what seems to be prophecies from hundreds, if not thousands of years ago, sadly seem to be coming true right on schedule.
Well, the prophecies are coming true, but I don't use these as judgments on people. And I think that's unfair, because what's really going on is much larger than us. And if, you know, the weather systems on planets throughout our solar system can be perturbed, if the sun is exhibiting bizarre behaviors and it's perturbed, you know, we're no different. We're connected to all of this too, and so it's going to get under our skin, and it's going to make us act rashly. And I think that's one of the reasons why the prophecies are so accurate, because these are prophecies that have been given down to us by cultures that have, so to speak, been there, done that, and bought the t-shirts.
They've already experienced it. Yeah,
they've experienced it, and notably they have survived it. So if you're, I was watching, for example, a video on 2012, and they were interviewing Inca elders. And I've had guests on my own show, and they deal with Hopi folklore and prophecy. And the thing that I find really amazing is that, Colin, when the ancient indigenous peoples talk about this time, they talk in very certain language. For them, there's nothing tentative about it. For those of us in the West who have never, there's nothing in our collective history about this. We have collective, what I would say, genetic deep fears. It's a rattlesnake topic for sure. You start talking about this seriously with people, they respond as though you've just thrown a rattlesnake in their face, and the first thing they want to do is brush it off, and then the second thing they want to do is thoroughly thump you for doing that in the first place. But, you know, you could go to and just say, hey, I'm a Flaubazian, and if you don't believe in the Flaubaz, you're going to burn in Gumash, and they'll look at you and say, hey, you know, there's drugs for that.
Yeah.
And they'll laugh. So it's amazing what will trigger this rattlesnake response and what won't. And what I see is a lot of deflection, a lot of cognitive dissonance. And in Western thought, where people will look at it and they'll say, well, gee, there seems to be a lot of information out there that leans in this direction, but maybe it will and maybe it won't.
Yeah.
Maybe the Titanic will sink and maybe it won't.
I see up on the phone line, I see, I think Chris is on the line, so we're going to try and make a connection here. And if the blog talk gods are kind to us, we just may have something. And good evening, Chris. Welcome to Terror Chat.
Hello, Colin. Can you hear
There you are.
I only had to do a few flips around the house, but we finally got through.
Excellent. I was explaining to Marshall you were having some communication challenges coming out of Long Island tonight. So, Chris, Marshall is on the line with us. Marshall, Chris Holly.
Hi, Chris. This is a ufology blind date?
This is a ufology blind date. Yeah. Don't tell your spouses and I won't say a thing. But,
okay.
Yeah, it's, you know, the reason I got you guys together is because you both of you are the same peas from the same pod, I think. You get me chatting, and I spend much of the day, if I'm not talking to Chris Holly and some of the new stories that she's writing, I'm talking to Marshall Masters on some of the YouTubes or your writings or your CDs and your DVDs. And I gotta tell you guys, you know, we gotta get that word out. The information that you two bring to the table, multiply that by 100,000 times. Think of the possibilities.
Yeah, and you know, Colin, I want to thank you because you let me run so many ideas by you. You know, you're like, my ideas are the spaghetti and you're the wall, and I really appreciate it.
Hey, I don't mind it sticking to me once in a while. Chris will tell you that. I've been accused of allowing it to stick a little bit too much to me, but I enjoy it. I like the creative instinct of people, and Chris is the same way. She does the same thing to me. So that's why I say I think the panel is pretty good tonight. And with that said, Chris, let me just say, I just want to throw a bump quickly. I read the story on Endless Journey about the strange lights glowing creature reported in Elk County, Pennsylvania. It scared the bejesus out of me, girl. Like, you've got to stop doing that to me, you know? You got to work me into this stuff. You can't scare me right off the bat.
Well, I thought that was a very unusual story. Out of everything that was out there, I found it in a little corner, and it really wasn't getting that much attention. And I thought to myself, this is not the first time I've heard of glowing creatures, and this is one that just happened recently, and I have to put it on the blog. I find it very interesting because I just interviewed a man, I haven't even written the article yet, I'm going to, who claims that he and a group of friends were out hunting in the middle of the woods where they were walking along a freeway, I think it's called. I can't remember the proper terminology, but it's where all the utility lines are, all the high tension wires are, and they came to a point where there was a radio station.
Right away,
a big transistor station or some other thing, and a bunch of high tension wires in this one little valley. And over it, they were quite startled. They just walked up to it, was what they described as a huge UFO with a thin beam of light down into these wires. And Colin and I then spoke about this because we were like, what was it doing? Was it, you know, fueling itself, this thing? Was it feeding itself? What was going on? And then I saw this little glowing man story. And I thought, well, what if they were using it for things we couldn't even think of, like feeding themselves, literally, and using energy for things that we, you know, our electric energy for things that just wouldn't occur to us. So when I saw this story and I knew I was going to write that other, you know, article, I had to put it on the blog.
Well, I tell you, when you told me that story, Marshall does the same thing to me. And the only thing I can think of is, well, what if they were just checking to see what it was because they've never seen electricity. They don't use that kind of, they have no idea what it is. It would be as strange to them maybe as uranium was to us when we found it. You know, Marshall, I think we tend to try and put everybody on the same level of intelligence and forget that we're not the brightest spark in the fire.
No, we're not. I mean, I guess we're like young teenagers. We really do know it all, but we don't.
Yeah,
and I think we've got more, you know, I mean, if you combine our penchant for high technology and weaponry and the fact that we're, as a species, we're somewhere in the midst of an evolutionary hormone rage, it's dangerous. And,
yeah.
You know, when I look at this, and this was something I really wanted to address with Chris, because in my own research, I deal with a lot of folks that are doing disclosures. And disclosures are a different kind. It could be seeing UFOs, but it's also government disclosures. They're coming across information that is really hurting them inside to sit on that. I mean, on one hand, they have security. On the other hand, they don't want to lose themselves, and they get caught between the two. And then they come out, and next thing they know, they find out they're the only turkey at the turkey shoot. And the disinformation operatives are just nailing them. And what amazes me and Chris, if you could help me understand this better tonight, I sure would appreciate it. But why is it when 70% or so of the people in North America believe that UFOs are real, that we still are so brutal on people that want to report sightings?
That's an excellent question and something that I've been trying to figure out for years. I must tell you that I have people now coming to me all the time, but I have always, always have to protect them. I have to make sure that I don't use their, you know, names, and I change it up so that nobody could figure out that it was them. People are just terrified to admit the experiences that they are having, and there is so many people out there having these experiences. The fear and the humiliation that has been hooked on to this is extremely confusing to me. And knowing that you're going to be here tonight, you know, Marshall, I was thinking about this. And if you look at our past, like 20 years, the movies have been feeding us Star Wars, Close Encounters, Star Trek, The Alien, one thing after another. And you're saying to yourself, well, it looks like we're being prepared to, you know, be told that there is more out there. And then on the other hand, the media slaps, humiliates, and laughs at anyone who comes forward. So my whole thinking is, who is causing this to be stalemated? What is really going on? Is it the government or is it the aliens? Maybe they just like it the way it is and are not ready. I don't know, but I do know it's happening, it's there, and we have been trained to laugh at it and deny it. So it's a strange, strange, you know, paranormal event on its own, the way we deal with it.
We have a statement and a question out of the virtual studio from Pam in Canada. It says, fear of the unknown, in response to why. And then admitting a potential problem with no solution is chaos. And that's not a bad scenario. If the government does not have an answer, you know, if they don't have an answer, they're most certainly not going to say there's a problem.
You know, it's... I'll tell you some of the things that I hear that really... stick in my mind, and I was looking for answers to. You know, one of the classic UFO debunker lines has always been, well, gee, if we're going to have UFOs, then why haven't they landed on the White House lawn to say, you know, we come in peace? All right. And on the other hand, I did a interview on a fellow that does the Allies of Humanity. He's channeling extraterrestrials, Marshall Vian Summers. And I went through that material quite extensively. And I compartmentalize things. I take the messenger and set it off to one side. And I focus on the message to see if it has internal logic. And there was a consistent internal logic in it that what they're saying is that in a cosmic thing, and I was interested in really just bouncing this off the wall with you, Chris, is the extraterrestrials that we're dealing with are not all necessarily good. They're not all bad either. It's kind of like humanity. We got the crazy uncles, the good aunts, and the cousin with an axe out there that wants to get everybody. But what he's saying is that there's an initial group of early exploiters. Think of Pizarro landing back in Central America, what happened to the Aztecs and the Mayans and the Incas and these ancient civilizations when the Europeans first came in. And what we have to understand is that they didn't do too well. 15 million of them perished as a result of being discovered by Europe through one disease or war or plague or another. And those guys that were doing that, they were just simply in it for the bucks. They wanted to get filthy rich, and they didn't care who or what they did to anybody. And so what he's really saying is that a lot of the ones that are coming in now are working with governments and leaders to manipulate the situation. They're like in the oil business, you'd call them the wildcatters, that are the big extreme risk takers that come in and take the big risk. And he said, those we can defeat. We can defeat the wildcatters. It's when the big ones, the Exxon Mobils of the cosmos, step in. That's when we wind up becoming a slave race and we lose our planet. And so what the point he's making is that we need to be very careful about who we consider to be friends and who we consider to not have our best interests at heart. And what are your thoughts on that, Chris? I'm interested.
Well, with my own personal experience, my feelings, and I'm just going to say from my experiences, what I truly feel is that the aliens that I have related to are emotionless. There is no emotion there. There is no care. And there was not that great an interest either. I think humans, I think mankind is making one extreme mistake. I think that they feel that we are far more important and this planet is far more important to these, let's call them travelers, than we actually are. I think we are a passing interest, possibly a truck stop, possibly a quick in and out on their way to better things. But I don't think we are, and I don't think our planet is, as important to them as we think we are. I do think we may have already been stripped long ago of what did interest them, and now we are an over-farmed planet that is really not that interesting or necessary. I think that my feeling is that they are far, far superior.
Okay. You've got the hairs on my arms going up, Chris, and you know what that means, don't you?
All information provided by TerraChat radio program is the opinion of the speaker and not necessarily the opinion of the owner or its agents. Although TerraChat takes all precautions to provide quality information, TerraChat assumes no responsibility or liability for the legitimacy of information provided by guests' opinions or statements. You're in the Night Zone with Colin Wright.
Hello? That would have been a mandatory break, so that's why we jumped to that, guys, because I'm so enthralled with the situation and the statement here that there's no way in heck I can hit all of the breaks that are required. So we'll just have to work with that issue as we get to it, because it's the information that matters, guys, and you guys are a wealth of information. So your opinion then, Chris, is that... We have kind of put ourselves on a pedestal, and we may not be that important. Do you agree with that at all, Marshall?
I think first off, all things are possible, and until we have a definite answer, and it could be that she's got a great point. They've come and taken whatever they wanted, and they've already gone on. If they wanted to come in and take genetic resources. Or, on the other hand, maybe when they do land on the White House lawn, it's to plant the flag and say it's all over but the crying.
Right?
I don't want to jump in here unless I'm able to.
Go ahead, Chris. Go ahead, please.
Because, That's true, and as I said, I can only form my opinions from the situations that for an entire lifetime I've had to go through. And I found the beings that I am confronted with or had been in my past very cold, very logical, and everything was based on just a cold science logic, and that I was quite, not that interesting. And what they wanted, they took. And what they do want, they take, and they move on. I do know that they have been here from the beginning of time, and we all know this. We know that since mankind could scribble on a wall, that we have always put a little something in the sky that didn't belong there because there were no airplanes. There was nothing that should be flying around. And the very fact that we worship the sky and always have lights and beings from the sky instead of the earth, when the earth, let's face it, gave us our water, our food, our shelter, gave us everything, we were, worshiping the sky. It's pretty logical that there was something coming down that was controlling us. And the Mayans are extremely interesting to me now, especially with all these cattle mutilations and animals being found worldwide drained of blood. I thought, I was always so interested in the Mayan culture because they were so heavily into bloodletting. I mean, doing it to themselves and sacrificing people and animals, and the blood was just all over. And I'm thinking, why? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, where does this come from? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But think about this. What if they saw another being that they were frightened of draining animals or humans at that time of blood, just like the mutilations we see today? Wouldn't that cause them then to think, if we offer them the blood by, killing the neighbor's kid instead and offering that blood, that they would leave us alone? So I started to think about this and felt, well, that was a lot more logical for that behavior to be taking place than the other things that, that history has taught us. So I think the answers are there. We just have to look at it in a different light. And if we could stop thinking like humans and try to look at it as aliens, and how interesting really are we? I mean, we cannot even figure out where they come from or how they get here or what dimension they're from. However, they just fly around us and do what they want when they want, and we are just helpless to it. So how interesting can we really be? That's my feeling, and that's, I think, something that everybody's missing. And I also... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Please. Oh, no, God, sorry. I was interrupting. I'm sorry.
But I just think that we really need to consider that it may not be the governments and the humans that are refusing to disclose. It may be that it is the beings themselves that want it this way and do not allow our governments or people that tend to disclose. I think we're not fully looking at this properly, and that's why we're so confused.
You know, that's interesting, because that is the essential point that Van Summers was making, is that this disinformation is being methodically performed by these, what he calls, I guess, scouting groups, these small groups that are trying to exploit, take the planet for their own benefit, that they've worked with a small handful of the power elites and governments, convinced them that they're going to get all this technology, they're going to get all of the goodies, and they're going to get control, and then after they really achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve, then there's nothing left of these guys. They're useless vassals. And that message seems to be coming interesting. What I'm finding from numerous sources when I'm researching that are channeling with other races beyond our system. And, there's channeling. You have to be concerned about the consequence of sensitive filtering. But there is that recurring pattern where other races are not so hands-on interventionists. They're from a distance, but they're trying to send a warning and saying, wake up and smell the coffee.
Yeah,
what are you saying?
Yeah,
I think you guys are hitting it right on the nail, and I think we're onto something. But let's see here. Pam from Canada in the virtual studio says, "I truly think it impossible for governments not to know." She says, "I might be off my rocker, but I think we got all that we have today from Roswell. So of course," and then the information hasn't finished. We will be right back right after this. I'm hitting the brakes perfect tonight. I don't believe it.
Tim McKide brings you the Bible prophecies, and we tie them in to the Anunnaki, Planet X, and the prophecies of Nostradamus.
All available in the archives. As we look through the sign of Aquarius, many believe this to be the forecoming of the cataclysmic events of 2012. We shall be looking into the quatrains of Nostradamus, his visions, the meaning of his strange writing. We shall discuss events, current, past, and future, as we attempt to unwrap the mysteries behind the teachings of Nostradamus through the eyes of some of the brightest thinkers on the planet. Join us in Terror Chat, Thinking Outside of the Box, as we take the Night Zone deeper into the darkness of tomorrow. All background music and bumps heard on Terror Chat can be found at GarageBand.com. Support your local artists.
You are listening to Terror Chat
on BlogTalkRadio.com. The Night Zone continues to follow the trail of information on paranormal events, interviewing experts on various facets of the diamond called Earth, bringing to you, our loyal listeners, unedited information which our guests willingly share. If you would like to comment on our show or offer further information and unable to call the show live, then please go to the Terror Chat page on blogtalkradio.com and post your comments.
You're in the Night Zone with the Calling Night.
And you are in the Night Zone with the Calling Night and a couple of my guests tonight, Marshall Masters from www.yowza.com and Chris Holly from, of course, Endless Journey blog. And you guys are a wealth of information. Chris, I tell you, when I've been discussing with Marshall various paranormal events and what have you, I've always moved him over to your stories and your encounters. I was telling Marshall how you scared the bejeebus out of me regarding the story of the lights flickering on and off and the gremlin or whatever it was that was searching after you. And he said, "I want to hear more stories." So here is your opportunity, Chris. You know, and this man's hair on his arms, I bet, don't stand up as fast as mine.
Well, I could go on forever because I grew up in a town, unfortunately for me, and I mean that, unfortunately for me, that was an obvious paranormal vortex because it was just one thing after another for so many people in that poor town, including that reptile, animal, monster, whatever it was, alien, that was in my house and there to kill me. I just have to tell you that the odor from that creature has lasted with me for my entire life and those that were there that night. There's been many, many things that happened to me as a child, from being chased by a UFO and a clicking noise, which you read that one story, Colin, in the woods where I was a little kid, to, you know, seeing UFOs and lost time and obviously being taken because I've been harmed and hurt, along with friends of mine. And it went on until I left that area. So it's an endless, for me, the paranormal was the normal. It was that much activity where I was. And it was just unfortunate that as a child, that's where I grew up and was used and abused. That's why my feelings on this whole subject is a little bit different. I was in an area where there was a river that ran out to the ocean, and very few humans, very small communities, and we were easy pickings, and pick they did. So, you know, I can go on and on about these things. I just am more hopeful that people will listen to me, because my message is, these things exist. These things may happen to you, and you cannot laugh it off or be so ill-prepared that you don't know what to do. Like any situation in life, you know, if you know that it's what's going to happen, if you know others have survived it, if you know what to do, you can handle it. So every story I tell, I always end with saying, if you see the light, run the other way. If you come across a paranormal experience, go find other people. If you can, just go find a lit up area. Don't willingly, you know, subject yourself to something that may be not exactly what you're wanting to do. You know, you would have to experience a lot of the stuff to feel that way, as I do. And as far as the government, I'm sure Marshall is going to back me up 100% on this. Of course they know. Every single one of them knows. And the Western world, Marshall, seems to be the ones that fight it the most. Because I have connections with going to China all the time. My son goes constantly. Most of my family does, for business reasons and other reasons. And I must tell you, there it's commonplace. There is a government department, and you are outside, and you're doing your business in China, and you see that UFO. You report it to that department, and they investigate it, and everybody really accepts it as a natural part of the environment. It is the Western world that is so fear-struck and terrified and laughed at and humiliated if they even speak of these things. And it's sad because the head of the department in China that runs their UFO section for the government was educated in MIT in the States. But of course, you know, none of this is known. And my question, Marshall, is why not?
Why are they? Well, I mean, if they're suppressing it, there's a lot of different reasons, as to, you know, allegiances, alliances. I can tell you that what we're seeing in our research, because I follow this, I mean, I've been following it since I wrote a book, Indigo ET Connection. And there I was looking at the Indigo children and their relationship to ETs. Who's coming here? What's the agenda? I mean, for me, I'm beyond the validation stuff. I mean, that to me, just, I can't understand why, when we have so many mountains of information,
absolutely,
that we're still stuck in this validation shtick. But it seems that it serves a purpose for someone to keep us in this validation, you know, this endless loop, where we just keep going around and around as though we have one foot nailed to the floor, and we wonder why we keep seeing the same scenery. And that, again, comes back to it's in someone's best interest to do that. And then the question that begs is, well, who is that someone? And I see that in other nations, they are, you know, far more forthcoming. We were doing some part of our research, a gal named Marina Popovich. During the Cold War, she was known as Madame MiG. She was the first woman in Russia to fly a jet aircraft. She was the first woman to break the sound barrier, has 100 standing aviation records. She's literally Russia's own Amelia Earhart, if you will. She's still alive and doing well, and we've talked with her a few times, and I've interviewed her with through translators, and she's point of blank. She has actually herself seen 3 UFOs in the course of her aviation career. There's no question to her that they're real and that there's an intelligence behind them. And what I found amazing was that, you know, because we're interviewing her over the phone in her home in Star City. So there's no apparent, you know, cover up there. She's able to come forward and say, yes, that's it. I mean, you know, we've got the recorded interviews.
It seems to me that there's been a definite, concise effort to steer information as opposed to filter it. It seems that it's been steered. There's been a very dangerous effort to force people into believing that if you see a UFO, you're a nut. And, yeah. You know, if you report it, you're even crazier. It has ruined people's careers. And, you know, airline pilots are now keeping stump. Although I understand that there is a major airline that does keep a UFO log of sightings that is not available to the public, which is another interesting portion. But my question is, why the cover-up? Is it because... is it because we can't handle the truth? You know, the old Jack Nicholson line. So what do you think to that, Chris?
I don't think that's right. I think in the Western world that we have been so trained to have this shame of all these subjects that if you talk about it or believe in it or write about it or anything, it's a terrible shame, and that's why I spend so much of my time protecting and promising and swearing and never giving out a name or, you know, just absolutely shielding those who tell me what they tell me. It's over this shame that you were just speaking of. It isn't that way in other parts of the world. It is for the Western world. And the question is, first of all, who and why? And secondly, why do the people just so willingly go along with that when they know that they've been out and have, you know, seen things themselves that they didn't know what it was, yet they'll continue to go along with this? It's as if we've been brainwashed and trained. You know, I sometimes wonder, as I was telling Colin, if that big UFO that was feeding into the electric wires wasn't putting something in instead of taking something out to keep us dimwitted about these things. But,
well, I think that started because I said, if UFOs are still using electricity, we have trouble in River City, I think was the statement.
Right. Well, we don't know what they were doing. We just know they were doing
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But even that is horrifying because these people genuinely believed what they saw. Hey, guys, I'm getting a nudge, so I got to go and do this real quick. We'll be right back. And then
We all have busy lives, and in such, we can't always be at a computer at a set time and date to listen to our favorite Blog Talk Radio show. So Blog Talk Radio has developed a method where you can listen to your favorite show right from your armchair or your desk. You could even listen archive or live. So how do you do it? Well, it's pretty easy. Come to www.blogtalkradio.com. Choose your favorite show. Hopefully it's Terror Chat. Enter the specific station page and sign up for RSS feed or add the various players to your website or blog. Or put the player right on your desktop. It's as easy as that. Once you have the player, your favorite show is just a click away. Enjoy.
You're in the Night Zone with Colin Knight.
And you are in the Night Zone with Colin Knight for the final 10 minutes of the show. We have with us in the virtual studio a couple of special guests. Her, too, has made it to the room. Good evening. We're glad you could make it. And is participating in a pretty good discussion regarding UFOs and alien connections and the like. And, of course, we have the famous guest 3069. If you are a guest, please feel free to join the Blog Talk Network. Other than that, feel free to sit back and relax. Unfortunately, you won't have the ability to do much other than listen. Have with me tonight Marshall Masters and Chris Holly. Marshall Masters, of course, with Yowza.com, and Chris Holly with EndlessJourney.com, I believe it is. And, guys, you know, Chris, we talked in, some time ago regarding the reptilian encounters, and we kind of skimmed over it when we were talking there, and I think we tweaked Marshall's interest. Do you care to fill Marshall in on that?
Well, I don't know if Marshall wants to hear this whole story, but I will do it
for you. Oh, I do. Chris, let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. And then, because I really want this. I did discuss this with one of my sources, who is, I can't say more than that. I'm the same way as you. I always have to worry about the names I drop.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that always stood in my mind with this source was that I asked, what's the personality of these reptilians like? And the answer was they have the personality of a feral cat.
Oh, I think that's being kind. Well, Mike's case was that my house was empty, and I was a kid, and at the time I was out with my friends, and I had to bring my car home because I had a junior license. My parents were out, Marshall, and when we came home and went into the house, my one friend said to me immediately, her hair on her neck went up and arms went up, and said, there's someone in the house with us. I heard it, and we all turned and ran out of the house. When we went out in front of the house, we jumped in my car, and I realized I'd left my pocketbook in the house. And I was 16. That's my only reasoning for this, is I was going to try to go back in to get it. And my friends would not let me. And with that, we saw the lights turn on and off all over the house very quickly until the whole house was blazing. Every light in the house was on. Then they'd all go off, and the front light would turn on and off. Then he'd put the outside spotlights on. And this went on, and it terrified us. We went and tried to get some help. The only help we could find close was her brother, who was 20 years old, and he had his friends. And they came back with us and sat up. We stood outside looking at this house, and the light show was going on, and it was frantic. And then this thing started to pound on the walls of my house and howl and scream the most blood-curdling sounds you have ever heard. I just burst out in crying. Everybody started shaking and crying. And long story short, the police came. My parents came home. They went into the house to find this terrible odor. And in my bedroom, this thing had set up a little chair opened my bedroom closet door and was sitting obviously behind the closet on this little chair with knives and a rope. And when I didn't come in, became so furious that he ripped with his claws my nightgown and bedding all to shreds and down the wall and left. Well, of course, it shook up everyone, and they searched for it, and they could not find it. However, there was a tunnel of moats in front of our houses that ran out to this river that I always talk about. All these situations happened. So they feel it ran down back into the river. About 2 weeks later, it came back. I was traumatized terribly. It was a very bad thing for me. And next door, there was a young woman my age living there with her parents. Her father was out. She was home alone with her little brother and her mother. And this thing, because the smell came back, grabbed a hold of this double-hung, huge window where this teenage girl was sitting watching television and ripped it out of the house, completely out of the house, and reached in and grabbed for her. The mother heard the commotion and came with a gun and shot at it. Again,
yeah.
Right away.
You did it to me again, you see? You know? The hairs on my neck, my arms. We'll be right back.
You're in the night zone with the Calling Knights.
And we are back in the night zone as we move into the final 4 minutes of the show. I'd like to go over, ladies and gentlemen, that we are just jammed up with some fabulous blog talk shows in and out and following us. And we don't want to goof up the line tonight with all of the political wranglings and the likes. So with that, we will be ending the show on schedule, unfortunately, not my choice. But we will continue this discussion another time. Marshall and Chris, we have hours of discussion left because you guys, every time you put one myth to bed, you open a dozen more.
On this, one last question on the reptilian thing. Did you feel that this ET had been stranded? Did you get a sense of that, or was it actually probing? Was it looking for something?
I think it was angry and for some reason wanted one of us, or was waiting to try to capture one of us. And it just did not succeed and became extremely agitated and frustrated. And it was a very violent creature. And I have to tell you again, the smell, it was a mix of rotting meat and mold, just the worst thing you could ever think of. And it lingered for a while after the thing left, too.
Well, and then with this town that you were in, all right, let's use this little town as an example of us as a human species saying, all right, it's on the table. We know it's there. We're dealing with it. How did the town people support each other? Did you, was there division or was there unity?
Division. Division and also very unfriendly visits from the local police, and there was an Air Force base at the time, at the end of this island, and they came and sort of told us that, you know, we didn't have that experience, but we did. There was no unity. There was fear, terrible fear, because these were frightening events, and the people were terrified. They armed themselves because they were country people at the time,
mm-hmm.
and that's how they dealt with it. They armed themselves and formed small groups of fathers with weapons, to be honest. That was about the only unity that came out of it.
So you would say that the fear, that the lack of unity, was something that was injected from outside the community as something, as opposed to being organic within the community itself. In other words, had there not been this external influence, would the town people have reacted to these situations differently?
Oh, absolutely. It was that same shame that was brought into it, that there was something wrong with you for being the victim. And that is what's being used over and over and over and over in our part of the world, is that you are shamed because you have been the victim. And it works well, because look at the predicament we're in. No one will talk about it, no one will listen about it, and you're laughed at or humiliated or whatever, or threatened. So the situation, I think, is at a breaking point, because there's so much activity going on. It's just not going to wash anymore, because people
it's
like you
gonna...
and I are out talking about it.
Hey, Chris, let me ask you, how do we, as a people, just stand up and say, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore?
Well, I've tried that approach and didn't get many people to listen to me, so I tell it to them in stories. And that seems to be working, Marshall. It's the only thing I know to do, is use the only gifts I have to try to get people to listen. Because as I say, the more they understand and learn, the better prepared they're going to be, because someday it will, or will happen not to them, but to someone they know. So you and I have been trying to stand up and yell, you know, listen to us. We're trying to teach you something that could save your life. But if the people will listen or not is a whole other story. I ask you, how do we do that?
Well, I find that I just talk to the ones who listen, and the rest are a blur. And there's a growing, it's funny, we always hear folks say, oh, you're a bunch of sheeple, you're stupid. No. You know, people have a sense of what it is, but there's the intimidation as well. And I think I see more people coming into awareness, and they're discerning, they want that real information. They don't want the abuse of coming forward. And so I think that the best thing we can do to say we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore is to do what you're doing, is to protect those that are coming forward to their experiences, but still sharing the experiences.
And to get the information out. And to get the information out. Guys, we're into the final minute, so I have to say good night to you both. God bless you both. It's been a fabulous night. Enjoyed it as usual. Don't cross me off the calendar, because we're coming back again. We're going to do this another time real soon.
Super.
Thank you so much. And Marshall, it's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Likewise. I look forward to the next chat.
Oh, sure.
We do have to get out of here. Have a good one. Good night.